ESPN College Football Podcast.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi here with you. It is Thursday, September 23rd. Heather Dinich going to join us later on the podcast as she empties the notebook and she gets ready for a pretty cool game at Soldier Field featuring Notre Dame and Wisconsin. We'll get her thoughts also on the College Football Playoff Board and where we are on the idea of expansion and how close are we to seeing something change in the coming years. And the elephant in the room, of course, when it comes to relationships following the Texas-Oklahoma move to the SEC. Also, Joey Galloway is going to join us with our picks. Cannot wait to have that discussion. He's in an ornery mood, as Joey Galloway usually is on a Thursday. But before we get to Joey and Heather, two things I want to mention. First, listen to In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Hall of Fame sportscaster Linda Cohn and national NHL reporter Emily Kaplan. Every Monday and Thursday, that is In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast. Great to have the NHL back on ESPN. Linda and Emily will bring fans their insider perspectives, reporting, reactions, and analysis to the latest breaking headlines and under-the-radar stories, both on and off the ice. That's In the Crease. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream now on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. Heather's coming up later on. Right now, let's start with Joey Galloway. Let's take a look at the biggest storylines heading into the weekend. Joey, about a month into the season now, it feels like we can get an idea of who's on top and who's struggling. And we talked about this yesterday with Booger McFarland. There are teams with identities, and there's a huge gap, I feel, where entering the season, it felt like there were six teams maybe fighting for four spots. Now it feels like Alabama and then everybody else. And we still don't know a lot about everybody else because they have flaws. Do you feel like that gap is there now even more over the first 3 weeks of the season with Bama, the way they played and the way we've seen Clemson struggle, Ohio State struggle, Oklahoma struggle, and a couple of other teams in finding their way?
Deb, you keep skipping over Georgia for some strange reason.
No, I don't skip over Georgia because Georgia, I know, is very good on defense. There's an unknown about the JT Daniels effect and, you know, how much he's going to play and how much they'll open up the offense with Georgia. So
you just named five teams. Georgia was not in that group that you just named. I don't believe that the gap between Bama and Georgia is that great. Georgia's defense is outstanding. If you play defense that way, you can afford to be conservative on the offensive side. That doesn't mean that JT Daniels can't carry them. It doesn't mean that they can't be explosive. We know they're physical. We know they'll run it. And we know their defense is great. Probably better defense at Georgia than at Alabama. So I don't see that great of a gap between those two teams. I do see a gap between the rest of the pack. So in my mind, it's Bama, Georgia, and then there's a gap between everyone else because we hadn't quite seen what these other teams are. And so as we move forward, we'll find out. Ohio State's going to get tested in the Big Ten East this year like they haven't been in the past. Can't quite figure out what Clemson is doing and why they haven't been the explosive offensive team that we've seen. Now, we know they lost a lot of talent, but we still expect them to be explosive. We haven't seen it. Oklahoma doesn't look like Oklahoma. Defense still isn't great. So, yeah, I agree with you on there is a gap, and it does feel like we are sort of at this stage. To me, this will – if this continues – now, believe me, we're only 3 weeks in, so we have plenty of time for this to change. But if this continues we will absolutely be two teams out of the SEC, and then we'll have everyone else fighting for two spots to get in the playoff.
How much of a drop-off is it for Georgia when JT Daniels is not playing and Stetson Bennett is the quarterback?
Well, we hadn't seen a drop-off. I mean, it's tough to tell in college football, because if JT Daniels doesn't play and you go play against a team that isn't very good and, you know, you have a great offensive game, but it wasn't against a team that mattered, it's kind of tough to tell. I don't think that Georgia is a concern to me. I think that moving forward, Georgia, you know, until they play Florida, until they don't have Bama on their regular season schedule. So, you know, Georgia's sitting in a pretty good place.
What's the gap in your mind right now after what you saw from Florida and how they played in the final three quarters of that game against Bama? That Florida-Georgia gap, how close is that? How wide is that in your mind?
It was what Florida did in the second half was very impressive. I don't know if I would think now that they could beat Georgia. I still think Georgia's defense is that good that some of the things that happened to Alabama in that second half would not happen to Georgia. Because again, I think Georgia's defense is better than Alabama's defense today. And so, you know, you heard Nick Saban say his team lost focus. They, you know, scored 21 points right off the bat early in that game. And it did seem as if they did lose some focus, but give Florida credit. They made some plays. I still see a gap between the Georgia team we've seen and even Florida.
I got to tell you, I'm very curious about this Florida team when they face Georgia and Jacksonville with Anthony Richardson also on the field and the mixing up with Emory Jones and what Dan Mullen can do. Because, like, to me, that was the one ingredient that was missing for Florida when you talk about maybe converting on a 2-point play late in the game, right? When you have Anthony Richardson out there, I think it changes something. So I'm curious about how that will look in the next month when those two teams play. That gap we talked about in the SEC East, let's go to the Big Ten East. You brought up Ohio State. After what you saw at Penn State and what they did against Wisconsin and how well they played against Auburn, this defense is really, really talented. And it feels like Clifford's comfortable now with that third OC. Where do you have Penn State in the East here?
I think for the first time in a number of years, the East is wide open. I think Penn State is much better. Michigan, even though they haven't played anybody, looks to be different. Michigan State is absolutely better than they were before. So the East appears to be wide open. And we will see, you know, what these teams are. One thing I know for sure, when you look at Penn State, you know, and they beat a Wisconsin, they beat an Auburn team, they won't face a team on that schedule that has as much offensive firepower as Ohio State. Ohio State has to get their defense to play at a higher level. And so if they can do that in these next few weeks before the Penn State game, it'll be a very interesting matchup, because right now, Ohio State's very talented on the offensive side. They run the ball with Henderson, very good. And, you know, then they're going to be playing a Penn State team. I think that game's in Columbus. So I don't think Penn State will have the opportunity to have a whiteout and have their crowd behind them. But that'll be a great matchup. And the East seems to be like it's going to be more fun for the entire conference this year, unlike in past seasons.
How do you view Travion Henderson? I mean, Boog was already talking about him being the best running back in 2023, 2022, because, yeah, you're putting your head down. But the kid is so talented. He's got Isaiah Spiller as the best running back in the country this year. But he thinks Henderson's going to be the best running back next season. How do you view this young man? Because when he has the ball, it just changes the entire offense for the Buckeyes.
Very talented. Kev, you know me. I'm not one of those guys that's going to be like, hey, he's going to be the best something in the future. That's not,
we know you don't like to, you know, you don't like to make predictions because,
yeah, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not one of those make 3,500 predictions, hoping that two of them hit. And then I'll be like, man, I told you so. Yeah. So very talented. What I can say is before this season started, this coaching staff was extremely excited about this running back room. And because of, you know, Henderson, other young guys in the room, but they were extremely excited, more excited than they've been in the past couple of years. And Ohio State, again, has been talented in that running back room. But the additions they've added, they were very excited about this room. So I expected to see some success at the running back position, a very talented offensive line returning. And so this isn't a surprise, I guess, to a lot of people in Columbus that Henderson is playing the way he is.
All right. Let's get right to it, and let's not waste any more time. Let's get to our picks. Hey, Taylor, you want to give us an update on how we did last weekend?
Absolutely. But first, let me play this delightful sound our imaging guy put together for us.
Joey and Kevin's Weekly Locks.
So for the picks, guys, Kevin was the big winner in week three. You guys differed on West Virginia, Virginia Tech. Kevin went West Virginia. Joey went Virginia Tech. Notre Dame, Purdue was also a game you guys differed on. Kevin went Notre Dame. Joey went Purdue. Joey went 3-4. Kevin went 5-2. That means Kevin, again, the winner by two games, and your overall records are tied at 8-11 going into week four.
We don't need to hear about our overall records. We just know that we're tied, and suddenly here comes the surge. Beautiful. 5-2 this past weekend. Joey goes 3-4. I like where we're at right now heading into week four.
That's great. Here we go. Let's get it.
All right, let's go. Notre Dame versus Wisconsin. The game's at Soldier Field. Jack Cohn facing his former team, and Wisconsin, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Taylor, Wisconsin's favored by 6.5 points. Joey, who you got in a game like this where it feels like Vegas is screaming to take the Fighting Irish?
And I'm going to take them. that surprises me, Kev, that is the line, but I'll take Notre Dame here.
It is hard for me to pass on Notre Dame getting 6.5 points in a game like this. Yes, I'm taking Notre Dame at the 6.5. And I know Vegas is saying, please go take the 6.5. We want you to. Okay, we'll take the sucker bet. We're going 6.5 with the Fighting Irish. I'm with you. Yeah. All right. Clemson laying 10 against NC State. And this is not one of those games where I'm going to give you a pick 'em. I want, like, because I think points play a role here. Because the question is, can Clemson score enough points? Do they have enough offense to score? And granted, they're not playing a Georgia team. Do they have enough offense to score multiple touchdowns to beat NC State by more than 10 points?
I believe it's your pick to make here.
Ooh, yeah, that means you don't have a pick yet. You're going to wait for me before. I just don't have any confidence in the Clemson offense at all, but I will take Clemson laying the 10.
That's pretty funny, Kev. Okay, well, I'll take NC State. I mean, let's mix this up a little bit. I will take NC State and the points. I don't know what Clemson is. I can't quite figure out when you play Georgia Tech and come down to the wire. I know there's a delay, but I don't know what they're doing over there. I'll take NC State.
Yeah, there's they don't have an identity right now. Their quarterback, for the first time we're seeing, is doubting himself, and that's not good, especially when they don't have playmakers around them stepping up at least. Iowa State laying 7 against a Baylor team that's 3-0, a team that has beaten Texas State, Texas Southern, and Kansas, and that's why they're 3-0. Are you going with the Cyclones laying the points?
Yeah, I'll take Iowa State in this one, even though, again, they're one of those teams that I expected to be better. I expected to come out and be very explosive, at least on the offensive side. And they really haven't looked that great, but I'll still go with Iowa State.
I'm with you. I'll take Iowa State. Baylor, good for you on the 3-0 start. They haven't really played anybody. And meanwhile, Iowa State has. So laying the 7 for me. Interesting game on ABC. Texas Tech, another team that's 3-0 in the Big 12. Taking on Texas, Longhorns are laying 8. Who you got?
I'm going to go ahead and take Texas. I don't feel great about that. I think that Texas is still trying to find itself somewhat, but we're early. And so I think Texas gets it done.
I'm with you. Texas laying the points. We are really boring. I think we're going to separate ourselves very soon here. Nebraska, after what they did, really good game. They were impressive on the road.
I'll take Michigan State.
You taking Michigan State laying the five?
Yeah. So I know you, like, when you do that thing, you're like, hey, man, Nebraska looked great. That only means you're going Michigan State. I've seen this rotation before. Go ahead and jot down Michigan State for me and you.
Yeah.
Since I took them, you're going to follow me.
Yeah, you're right. I went with Michigan State as well. It was a good setup. Kenneth Walker, and they've got an identity under Mel Tucker. Chip Kelly, UCLA, laying 4.5 against Stanford.
I can't believe, number one, Chip and UCLA kept me up way past my bedtime last week. We couldn't do college football final until the UCLA game ended, which I think you were probably 7 hours sleep by time that game ended.
I watched that game, brother. But my question to you is, so what time was the exit? When did you walk off campus?
We probably got out somewhere close to 3 o'clock. Kev, I don't believe you stayed up for that ending.
Fun day. What do you make of Fresno? What do you make of Fresno State's offense and Hayner?
Man, the game was so crazy, but Fresno State has played some good games. I believe they play Oregon.
They're within a touchdown. They played Oregon really well.
So they're one of those teams that can say, like, we're really close to being like undefeated right now so far in this season. I am going to go. Give me UCLA. I know,
and Chip's, 4.5.
I know Chip's your boy, so I know you got to go with him.
No. I'm actually picking Stanford. But the funny thing is, and you know, Boog texts with Chip, and I know you'll love this story. He's already a week after he was all over Chip and loving what Chip's doing. He's already put them on the DEFCON.
that sounds about right for Boog.
Yeah.
It is a week to week situation. Yeah.
I love that. I was like, wait a second. Chip was your guy, man. That team's already on DEFCON.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. We'll round it up soon here. I want to know, Oklahoma laying 17 against West Virginia. That is our nightcap on ABC. And of course, the points play a role in a game like this.
Yeah, they do. And I'm going to take West Virginia only because Oklahoma. They screwed me already this season. I took them as one of my locks. And once you screw me,
you're done.
You're dead to me. Let's go Mountaineers. Give me West Virginia in the points.
I love the reasoning here. Basically, we can throw out all the numbers and what the team has done. It's a personal thing now. And Oklahoma screwed Joey, so he will take the opposing team, West Virginia. This is a tough line at 17, man. Like, I don't know if Oklahoma can cover 17, considering that they play to the level of the talent on the field too often. So I'm going to take West Virginia the points because West Virginia, I like their offense a lot. So I'll take
West Virginia. Notice how you keep following me, Kev.
Nothing like that. I'm not trying to
follow. Records are tied. You're just trying to, like.
Don't forget, you're 3-4. You're only good as your last game.
You're trying to stay right there with me.
All right, our last one. Texas A&M. Versus Arkansas at AT&T Stadium. Line is 5.5. Aggies. Who you got?
I think you would like to pick first here, Kev, because
again, Taylor, you notice that's the only time he does that is because it's when he does not.
Every time I say a pick, you take the same team.
I think this is a one score game, but with that, I'm going with A&M. They win by a touchdown, so I will take A&M laying the 5.5.
Okay, then I'll take Arkansas.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, we got it. We can't come in with the same guest picks every week here, Kev. I'm going to go ahead and take Arkansas here.
Oh, yeah. You're taking the sacrifices. I can see how you are, Joey. All right. We differ on two games. So you've got Arkansas on the points. I've got A&M and the other one is Clemson. I've got Clemson laying the points. You got NC State taking 10. All right.
Yep.
Joey, it's been real.
All right, Kev.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
We do it every Thursday, and I love doing it with our college football insiders here. And that is the podcast where we get the opinions as well as the reporting. And there's a lot of that coming in. And it's great to have a mainstay on the college football podcast. That is Heather Dinich joining us, one of our insiders. And Heather, you wear multiple hats. And considering the list of people that we have on this podcast weekly, Joey Galloway ain't doing this. David Pollock ain't doing this. I know that Booger McFarlane ain't doing this. I know Paul Feinbaum and Herbie aren't doing this. What are you doing exactly as you trying to balance covering college football as well as just being Heather Dinich, responsible of an entire household?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask because I'm sitting here in my office and I'm getting a grocery delivery dropped on my front porch that has more Doritos and cookies than apples and proteins. And I've got laundry going on the other side of this wall. I have to pack my bags because I'm heading out to Soldier Field tomorrow for a good game between Notre Dame and Wisconsin. And I'm talking to you, my friend. And you know what? I've even got little Legos on my desk here. You know, I got one that's a witch, which is quite fitting for the day. So
it's nice to know that I'm not the only household struggling with the idea of Doritos over apples, because that is the daily fight when we get ready for lunch and we talk about our afternoon snack. So that actually is comforting for me as we deal with making sure our kids make good choices. Making choices. Let's go there. Let's seg to the big story with your covering with college football and the playoff board. Have we made any choices? Like, where are we right now as we talk on Thursday?
Man, like, it's a good segue because they're like my kids. Like, they can't pick which movie they want to watch tonight. they can't figure it out, you know? Like, some people at the table are still talking about consideration for eight teams. It's certainly not the majority. That's not unanimous. I think the general consensus is that, hey, this thing is going to expand. Probably it's going to look like 12-team format is the way to go. But they all have questions. And I think, you know, one of my sources pointed this out to me yesterday. The people on the working group, the four people on the working group, Bob Bowlesby, Craig Thompson, Greg Sankey, Jack Swarbrick, have had 2 years to digest this, right? And everybody else in that room was handed the proposal in June. So they are still, yes, they had the summer to vet it. They had the summer to go back to their constituents, athletic directors, coaches, players, and get feedback from it. But last week they had a call and there were a lot of questions, about the Rose Bowl, how the bowl fits in. There is a concern about the 17th game, even though it's a really slim possibility. People say, well, okay, if it happens, what does that do to the health of a student athlete? There's concern about the academic calendar, playing semifinals or quarters in the second week of December when there are exams. So there's a list that goes on of valid questions. And instead of feeling comfortable enough to present it to the presidents next week and say, here, vote on this, we've checked all the boxes, they said, we're going to go to Chicago. The presidents can join us by Zoom, and we're going to continue to find answers to these questions instead of just talking about the questions.
And then you have the elephant in the room, and that is Texas and Oklahoma in that news. How has that changed the dynamic in these meetings and these conversations and these relationships?
It's changed it a lot. I mean, college athletics is always filled with mistrust, right? But when that happened, especially throughout the Big 12, and I know that there's, you know, it raised some eyebrows about Greg Sankey's role on the working group, coupled with his role in that expansion discussion, you know, but he has said to me, and others have said repeatedly, that we have to put hurt feelings aside and act as leaders and get things done. And they have also, we believe that we can do that. Now, while there's a lot of focus on Greg Sankey in that matter, Craig Thompson of the Mountain West, who's also on the working group, said to me, what is he supposed to do pull Bob Bowlesby aside in the hallway at one of our many, many meetings and say, hey, by the way, this is happening. He said, it doesn't work like that. And it doesn't. And there's also a timing question of it. And they were working on the proposal far longer than the conversations began with Oklahoma and Texas. So, I've heard both sides to it. And I think they're at the point now where they're trying to put that behind them and work together in a professional way. But I can tell you in the Big 12 particularly, those relationships are damaged. Mm. They really are. And it wasn't just OU Texas, Kevin. I mean, then you've got three new commissioners forming an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but while it brought them together, did it fracture everyone else? And what does it really mean? So there are also a lot of questions just around the power play.
Heather, is there a time frame here as they seem to take their time in vetting this out and kind of have a variety of different ideas, as you mentioned, four in the room, fully aware. Now another group having shorter time frame of processing. Is there a time frame to come to a resolution in this matter?
CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock told me yesterday that they're not in a rush. He said that it's still possible. It could happen before the end of this 12-year contract, which runs through 2025. He said that now if we were to do it in 2024, we'd have a couple months to figure it out. But if we did it in 2026 and started a new contract, he said we have a couple of years. So that's it's possible. He said, to answer your question, there's no timetable, but that's what he said. But the other thing, too, is that we're a part of this. We as an ESPN. And if it happens before the 12-year contract, what the sense around the table, the vast majority of commissioners want to open this up to other television partners. And if that is going to happen within this contract, ESPN has to either agree to it or not buy some of those other games and let them take it to the open market for other games. I have not talked to anybody about ESPN about what they want to do or if they've started those conversations. But the reality of it is ESPN definitely has a role in that.
Okay, we will see how this continues to play out as a backstory to the action on the field. And you mentioned your road trip as you get ready for a pretty cool game at Soldier Field. Now, I'm the one that I love neutral site games. I love playing, and the White House is a perfect example of seeing non-conference games and seeing Auburn on the road at Penn State. That's just, there's something, I know, very cliche in saying that, but magical about it. This particular matchup, I think, is also a little cool because it's at Soldier Field and the fan base is in the region, right, where they can all come together. As you get ready for Notre Dame, Wisconsin, what's the one thing you want to learn from this matchup over the weekend?
Well, honestly, I want to know how good Notre Dame is. I sat down with Jack Swarbrick in D.C. this week because he was there for lead one where all the athletic directors meet. And I sat down and I said, I don't know how good you are. He said, well, thanks. I said, you don't know how good you are either. He said, we talked about their offensive line and just how young they are and can they stack up against Wisconsin? Because, you know, they're always good up front and they're such a disciplined, well-coached team. But that's my question. There's so much parity, Kevin, through the first 3 weeks is what we've seen. A lot of good teams. Can somebody be great? I mean, Florida State is terrible, you know, so we can't judge Notre Dame by that. So I think it just basically, how does Jack Cohn look against his former team? He said it's going to be weird. You know, that's a storyline everybody will be watching. But to me, up front, I think Notre Dame's offensive line is the key to a lot of it after talking to Jack.
There are a lot of different ways we can go about it, but I want to get your thoughts on, as we empty the notebook here, what's the other storylines that stick out to you? I mean, we talked about it with Joey Galloway about, you know, top heavy with Alabama and then the gap with everybody else. And you could put Georgia somewhere there, depending on who's the quarterback at the time. But then everybody else has a ton of questions in the bottom part of the top 10. For you and what you've seen over the first 3 weeks, what stands out?
The Big Ten. Is Penn State for real? Because when I watched them against Auburn, I thought they were one of the few teams that passed the eye test. I mean, to me, I have them at number four
because they went on the road. They beat Wisconsin, a ranked team. They beat an SEC team at home in a crazy environment, which is such a, you know, like you said, a very exciting win for them. And that's their resume. Their resume is spectacular. But then you have Sean Clifford completing an insane percentage. It was like 85% of his passes. I was like, that's not the Sean Clifford we saw last year. Mm-hmm. Their secondary was great. Jahan Dotson's just making highlight reel plays all over the place. And you think, wow, maybe this, you know, this team might be pretty good. But then you say, okay, wait, they've got to play Iowa and Michigan and Ohio State and Michigan State. And it's like, can they survive that gauntlet? Because it's a double-edged sword. It's tailor-made to impress the selection committee, but it can also knock you right out of it. So I think that is my question is, how good is the Big Ten, and will it cannibalize each other, or mm-hmm. can somebody like Penn State or Ohio State, you know, their defense isn't great, but can they get back into the conversation, and can somebody really be a legit contender?
Yeah, and I'm with you in that whole entire conversation. Also, we'll learn a little bit about Michigan against Rutgers, and also Michigan in the next month. If they're down in a game where they can't run the football, can they still be effective on the offensive side with their passing game without Ronnie Bell? So there are a lot of stories. And then can Michigan State continue to sustain what they're doing under Mel Tucker with the transfers? And they've done a great job. So I'm with you. I think the Big Ten is maybe the most fascinating conference outside of the top three in the SEC, and you could make a big debate on who's that third team in the SEC, right? Is it A&M? Is it Florida from what we saw? Could it be Arkansas or Ole Miss? How do you view the SEC?
So I think it's super fun too, because Sam Pittman, as you mentioned, has done an outstanding job. And I'm curious about that A&M Arkansas game, because I'm kind of looking ahead at A&M Alabama, and I'm like, is that going to mean as much as I think?
Exactly.
You know, going to get knocked out. And then, you know, knowing how much Florida wants to get back at Bama in the SEC championship game, I think that conference, again, has a tremendous shot at getting two teams in again. And you go back to the playoff conversation and, you know, people are hitting the panic button already in a 12-team format that the SEC is going to get seven teams in. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, but I can tell you it's better for college football than the SEC getting two of four teams in constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's either Alabama, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, keeping an eye on A&M. Can they do it and upset the apple cart? I mean, Auburn's a good team to go on the road and hang with Penn State. I mean, Bo Nix has done a nice job. I certainly would have called that play, but that's why I don't make, you know, millions of dollars to call a fade in the end zone there. But that's okay. We'll let somebody else make the bad catch for that.
Well, there's a lot of people, Heather, who agree with you on the fade in a goal line situation. Everybody just, you know, they should abolish the fade in many situations there when you're inside the 5-yard line. Heather, it is always great to have you on board with us here on the College Football Podcast. Enjoy your trip to Soldier Field. More importantly, enjoy being a mom. Best of luck there, the Dinich household, as you get ready before the traveling, okay?
All right, man. Thank you so much for having me on.
Big thanks to Heather Dinich, wearing multiple hats, of course. She covers the sport of college football while still making sure everything's taken care of when she's on the road with the family. And Joey was a lot of fun today. There were certain moments where he was short and sweet. And then there were certain moments you could tell he was a little annoyed that our battle's tied up right now. ESPN Radio has two games you can enjoy over the weekend. Texas Tech at Texas. Tune in at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, and Tennessee at Florida. Tune in at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. The Swamp will be rocking for an old school rivalry. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back on Sunday with Matt Barry and Paul Feinbaum. Those guys will be recapping the weekend. Don't want to miss that as we get ready for week four. Want a big shout out here for Taylor Schwenk. Of course, our audio producer does a phenomenal job on Wednesdays and Thursdays to bring you the ESPN College Football Podcast. I'm Kevin Agati. Have a fantastic weekend.